This is Aspire, Arch Street Public Radio, broadcasting interviews from our Innovate podcast series.
My name is Robert Rim, Managing Editor for Arch Street Press. I'll be your host today.
In 2014, Jane Chu became the 11th chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts. With a background in arts administration and philanthropy, she's also an accomplished artist and musician, receiving bachelor's degrees in piano performance and music education from Wachita Baptist University, and master's degrees in music and piano pedagogy from Southern Methodist University. Additionally, Chairman Chu holds a master's degree in business administration from Rockhurst University and a PhD in philanthropic studies from Indiana University. From 2006 to 2014, she served as the president and CEO of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts in Kansas City, Missouri, overseeing a $413 million campaign to build the center. She was also an executive at the Kauffman Fund for Kansas City from 2004 to 2006, and vice president of external relations for Union Station Kansas City from 2002 to 2004. Previously, she was vice president of community investment for the Greater Kansas City Community Foundation. Chairman Chu, good to have you with us today.
Well, thanks for letting me join you.
Where did your passion for the arts originate?
Well, it really came as a young child. You know, my parents were born in China, and they came to America separately, met each other in the United States, and I was born in Oklahoma, and I grew up in Arkansas, and so I've lived sort of this bok choy corn dog life my growing up years, but those piano lessons that I was taking dutifully as a child when I first started, when I was about 8 years old, became an entry point to my ability to express myself and communicate even more. And this happened especially when my father died when I was nine. He had become ill, and I didn't really have enough words to express my grief over the loss of a parent at age nine. I suspect many nine-year-olds don't have the large enough vocabulary, but I certainly didn't because my parents spoke Chinese at home and I spoke English at school. But music for me, no matter what kind of music it was, really became my avenue of expression because there was something, and I'm not sure I could even articulate it now, that gave me the sense of belonging. It was soothing. I was able to express myself in so many ways that transcended the linear use of everyday conversations. And since that time, I've really become more intellectually interested in it. I majored in the arts and music in college, and it's always been something that I wanted to be able to provide others, a tool belt of ways to express themselves beyond the use of everyday conversations, because it's more meaningful and we can go deeper.
And so often we see that study of the arts has a lasting positive influence throughout life. What role has music played in your professional development? And how did you make the transition from education and the study of music to administration?
It's really actually been less of a transition and more of a making of a soup, for example. If you threw all the ingredients into the pot at the same time, all of those ingredients would come together to bring the soup to its most flavorful. And so I have seen education and pedagogy and music and other forms of the arts that I've been involved in personally, as well as administration, as all being in the same soup. So it's been an opportunity to play a huge role in my own professional development because I can experience the process of creativity no matter what I do and also celebrate the arts.
And that carries through life, doesn't it, when you start out young and you continue your study and then whatever career that you choose?
Well, it has certainly for me, and I see that in a lot of people, but I also want to emphasize that it's never too late to start, because if we have a mindset of being a lifelong learner, one of the best ways to be involved is through the arts.
And your background with the Kauffman Center provided key experience for your appointment to the NEA. What were the primary takeaways from your time in Kansas City that have served you well?
Well, at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, I had a wonderful opportunity to start from groundbreaking. And so not only did I have hard hat hair for 5 years and learn about construction, but I certainly knew why we were building this venue for the support of the arts and bringing the community together. But it also gave me an opportunity to work with so many different types of perspectives. I would be working with drywallers and bringing them together with oboe players and everybody in between. And so there's something there at the intersection of bringing together people who come from disparate perspectives, all for a common purpose. Kauffman Center was an opportunity, and this is the same opportunity at the National Endowment for the Arts.
And at the heart of it, isn't curiosity central to that?
Curiosity, open-mindedness, learning about different perspectives, lifelong learning about ourselves. And what is so great about that is, you know, when you're in a creative mode, and no matter what you're doing, that creative process involves suspending beliefs on some level so that you can see how something new unfolds. And you don't get stuck in those old and tired problems and saying, I don't know how to solve them, because creativity allows you to solve old problems in new ways.
Particularly when you're willing to work with drywallers and oboe players in the same breath, right?
That's right.
And what does the phrase creative economy mean to you and to the NEA?
It's a really exciting time to be involved in the creative economy process, because the arts are being seen nationally in communities large, small, rural, remote, densely populated, all across America. Communities are starting to recognize that the arts can actually play a role in jump-starting the vitality of a community, no matter what size. They encourage people to come together, people who see there's all kinds of arts activities and programs going on throughout the years, companies wanting to relocate because of such activities, not only help bring meaning and vitality to a community, but they can jumpstart, and there's a pretty strong relationship between jumpstarting economy, spillover benefits, all kinds of other spending, attracting of tourists as well as the locals. So the creative economy is really special to us and the National Endowment for the Arts, and we actually even have design grant programs that support such programs that can jumpstart the vitality in a community.
And the NEA and other organizations have for many years shown a clear correlation between arts participation and civic engagement, also higher academic achievement among at-risk youth who've engaged in the arts. Arts institutions and districts directly attract investment, development, jobs, innovation, just what you were talking about, and they generate some $700 billion within the U.S. economy each year. Have you found that educators and states are fully aware of the impact of the arts?
Some are really starting to recognize that being involved in the arts adds a dimension for students, for example, in schools, to really learn in a different way. So not only are they going through the what can sometimes be interpreted as rote learning, but with the arts, they add a dimension that brings meaning to their lives. It's a longer lasting set of subject matter that they can retain. We've seen it particularly, as you alluded to, youth who come from very few social or economic opportunities getting to practically even the playing field with their peers because they might learn through the arts. And those who are engaging in the arts, we're finding now have higher education rates, more involvement in the community, even not just in the arts, but in other areas. We've seen that Nobel laureates in the sciences are 17 times more likely to actively participate in the arts than other scientists. And so to be able to have that extra dimension of how we learn through the arts, how we participate, how we learn about ourselves and others, can't be anything but good.
And rote learning, as you mentioned, can often be the death of both curiosity and learning. Are we getting away from that in schools these days?
One of the things that we are seeing a momentum building in terms of arts education is that while there have been many cuts in school systems of the arts, we're starting to see it takes a village type of concept, where schools are connecting to community organizations that provide arts activities and arts programs and arts learning. And together, they are collaborating in terms of providing arts projects for students. That kind of collective impact, that kind of everybody in it together type of collaboration is much more sustaining, because it leaves the student with more opportunities to have more people support the student. That shows that the arts are not often a silo by themselves, or not often a corner, and they're not just for some people but exclude others, but in fact it's for everybody.
And along those lines, tell us about the Creativity Connects initiative.
Well, it really started, well, we were actually first asking the question, you know, has life changed for artists now that there's been the internet? Internet is a way of life for most of us. And are artists behaving differently? Are they creating their own art differently from the way it was before? So we set out to do focus roundtables, focus groups across the nation to say, what's it like now being an artist? And the Creativity Connects initiative was born out of that, because we learned that, yes, indeed, life has changed, and that there's a giant mashup going on across the nation that is connecting the arts, different genres and different types to each other, as well as connecting the arts to other aspects of our lives that are not necessarily arts. So, for example, in some ways before internet, music would be over here and visual arts would be over there and presentations would be in another corner and everybody would be sort of separate and there would be different categories. And while there still are, and we can celebrate those categories, we're seeing this fusion come together where sometimes you will see museum exhibitions that have a performing arts aspect to it. And if you took the performing arts aspect away from that specific exhibit, it would no longer, the exhibit would not even be present. It wouldn't be in its full form. We see that going on in all kinds of other subject matters where the arts are music and art are coming together, or dance is coming together with a creative writing. So that Creativity Connects concept is going on. But the other aspect of the Creativity Connects is related to arts with other subject matters. We're seeing arts with healthcare and arts with engineering and arts with all kinds of other subjects. And that really is sending out the message, the same one that we believe in terms of our mission, and that is the arts infuse our everyday lives in so many ways and that they're not off by themselves. So the Creativity Connects initiative really is a way to support that mindset and jumpstart grants and projects that are out there doing good work inside the arts category and also in connecting the arts with other aspects of life that may seem like they aren't related to the arts, but actually can be.
And it's great to see how Creativity Connects has invested in really innovative projects to spark new ideas, collaborative ideas. And you mentioned a few of the other target areas outside of the arts. Are you finding a receptivity among such a wide variety of fields and careers and endeavors?
We are indeed. We're seeing people say, oh, I'm so glad that you've recognized this. When we first put out our first round of Creativity Connects requesting proposals and applications, we really didn't know what to expect. Were there really projects going on? We got triple, possibly quadruple the amount of numbers of applications coming in for this. So that already told us it's out there and people really were fusing together some of these projects. We're also getting really good response from people who are putting together what they knew intuitively could work. So yes, the response out there has been significant and we expect that it will continue to build momentum.
And can you detail a few of the projects that have been awarded funds through the Creativity Connects program?
It's everything from connecting an arts project in Freeman, South Dakota, where there's connecting the arts with agriculture. And this lullaby project that Carnegie Hall is doing in partnership with New York Presbyterian Hospital is really about pairing up professional musicians with expectant mothers who compose together and record lullabies written especially for each of the children. So that's a way to bring in music and really create a bond once the child is born. There's a community garden that's going on in Buffalo where the Literary Center and the community garden are connecting to bring poetry into community gardens. There is a dance partnership at Virginia Tech, where they're connecting technologies that not only enhance dance, but it's got a way of developing innovation on movement-based sensors and electronic textiles for designing and stage, and there's a smartphone application. So all of these mashups between, say, technology and engineering and the arts or healthcare, those are coming together to create a far more effective project than just those two projects if they were by themselves separate.
So great to hear, and such a wide range of impact. Are there some fundamental similarities in successful grantees?
Oh, that's a great question. We see that everyone is really connecting the arts to the community in so many different ways. So what we've been heartened by is that these grantees really have their finger on the pulse on what's going on in their communities. And it's not just creating a project and hopes that they'll get funding and it have no relevancy. They're looking to make meaning and they're looking to make a difference. And so these projects that we're funding, we're really seeing something that is hitting a home run, not only in terms of possibly tangible results that you can see and record through hard evidence, but we're seeing them make meaning and we're seeing them go to the depths of creating something substantial, something substantive. So that really is very special to see our grantees do that, and we're very proud of them.
This episode is brought to you by Arch Street Press and Better to Speak of It, fostering relationships and results through creativity. Better to Speak of It focuses on core management and personal values in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, executive and artistic director of Carnegie Hall. The book offers specific firsthand experiences from the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the Museum of Modern Art and the New York Public Library, as well as major performing artists such as Jesse Norman and Michael Tilson Thomas. Better to Speak of It, available now from Arch Street Press.
And speaking about communities and on a more local level, the Education Leaders Institute, for which the NEA brought together teams from 29 states to collaborate on ways to strengthen states' arts education policies, share with us some of the key takeaways and the impact that it's had on arts education.
Well, you know, the Education Leaders Institute was such a great opportunity. We learned so much from that because, similar to what we were talking about before in terms of collective, in terms of the Creativity Connects initiative, where we went out and did focus groups across the nation and said, you know, what's life like now as an artist? We did the same thing through the Education Leaders Institute, in that we were able to hold a number of sessions through the Education Leaders Institute, bringing together educators and saying, you know, what's it like out there? Where are the challenges? Where are the opportunities? And how has arts education worked? And are we making sure that we're relevant? Because just as our grantees, we want to make sure that what we're doing is making a difference. So the Education Leaders Institute gave us a foundation. We learned so much from it about our collective impact grants that we now make. It's similar to that It Takes a Village concept, because partners and education partners from all across the nation were sharing ideas, brainstorming, and out of that, we were able to create our collective impact grants. So while the National Endowment for the Arts has supported for five decades arts education projects that for students specifically, as well as for training in teachers, but now these collective impact grants are recognizing that they can bring community arts providers and artists together into the schools and together provide an ongoing opportunity for arts education. And we're seeing far larger and more sustainable grants through the collective impact grants because of the Education Leaders Institute. We want to make sure that we're relevant, and that Education Leaders Institute report gave us that opportunity to say, yes, we're making a difference that way.
And not only in schools, but also collective impact on communities and families, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, that's where we want to be, especially in those schools that initially were being cut, where the arts education and the arts programs were being cut, to be able to go back in there and create a whole network of partnerships as a result of the Education Leaders Institute findings, and also to help jumpstart some reports that set the context for how the arts are making a difference. And it really hits home for those kids of all ages who can benefit from the arts, can recognize that this is another avenue of expression. We saw in California that as a result of attending the Education Leaders Institute, they were able to create an initiative for California. It's called Create California, where they bring together a cross-sector of partners to implement a blueprint for creative schools. California Art Alliance for Arts Education is a lead partner. They're a collective impact grantee from the National Endowment for the Arts, but they are working to create a resolution where all students have an opportunity in arts learning. We saw the same thing in Alabama, where after participating in the Education Leaders Institute, that state also formed a leadership team, had diverse stakeholders to bring together arts education, and that team has also spearheaded the development of an arts education plan for the whole state of Alabama.
And talking about a cross-sector of partners, tell us about the Creative Forces, which is the NEA Military Healing Arts Network. How did this innovative collaboration with the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs come about? Just fascinating how this came to play.
It's been such a wonderful opportunity to support our military service members and now veterans as well. And so we're honored to be launching the Creative Forces program. You'll recall that we've had two back-to-back increases in the NEA budget in fiscal 2016 and 2017 for this specific purpose of the Creative Arts Therapies Program for our military service members across the nation. Well, we started out actually going to two locations back in 2010, one at Walter Reed, it's called the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, and then we had another Creative Arts Therapy Program at Fort Belvoir in Virginia, and the responses of our service members who were affected by post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, and other psychological health conditions, and their engagement in arts programs, it was so transformational that they were calling over, the clinicians were calling us to say, this isn't just an arts project, we want to make this part of our standard of care. So they saw the value in it because service members were getting to create, they were getting to be engaged, their memory was more enhanced, they were able to manage their pain and communicate in a way that was more effective so they could receive treatment that really helped them. So this arts program, talk about a real example of demonstrating arts with other aspects in our lives. That's how the Creative Forces came to be. And now we have had the opportunity to take those two sites that we started with, and we've launched 10 more. So a total of 12 locations across the nation where we're able to take the Creative Forces Creative Arts Therapies program and do two things. We're able to go to 10 other sites across the nation, but we're also able to engage community arts providers in those other sites across the nation so they can provide arts programs ongoing. We heard from our service members who said, we love these arts programs that we're going to, but we're concerned that when we leave our clinical settings in Bethesda and at Fort Belvoir, that we'll lose them because we don't know. We want to get engaged in our own communities. And so to be able to bring the same creative arts programs to the communities where they're going to be, our service members and veterans, that is a home run. And the piece that is our sweet spot out of all of that is that it's not just that we're linking the arts to our service members. It's that the NEA has had 52 years of experience in being in local communities and having the national perspective at the same time. So we are able to coordinate with the community providers, and at the same time, we're connecting the clinical piece across the nation so our service members and the veterans in need can participate in medically supervised creative arts therapy and also link to the arts in their own communities so they can be engaged in their communities and feel like a real contributor to their community.
And it would seem that your administrative career has well prepared you for programs like Creative Forces.
Well, it's I tend to be a systems thinker. So I take a look and I say, you know, if I were a city planner, for example, I'd say, you know, how is the transportation looking and what about the water system and where are the neighborhoods and how are they all functioning? And similarly, have the opportunity here at the National Endowment for the Arts to be able to say, you know, how is the network going? Who's out there providing it? What kind of opportunities can we make sure that we jumpstart to make sure everything is relevant? So similarly, the Creative Forces Initiative lets us say, you know, where's the best places to start our Creative Forces Initiative? Where are service members and veterans? How about the ones that we won't be able to reach in other remote areas? We've actually started a telehealth component to pilot a program that our service members get clinical support as well as participate in arts programs wherever they are. And we've also worked with our partners, our state arts agencies, to make sure that in every state there is something there. We think this is a very successful network system.
And talking about systems thinking, what advice would you have for arts and nonprofit organizations to build bridges into those communities that are in fact underserved?
I would say there's never been a better time to be a leader in the community if you are an arts organization or an arts provider, because there are opportunities to connect the arts in so many aspects, from community vitality to arts education to bringing meaning to our lives and bringing people together and having new forms of expression. So arts organizations out there, I want to embolden them to say, wait a minute, I can play a key role as a leader. And then if on a very practical level, if they want to know more about how they can participate in supporting our service members and through our Creative Forces Initiative, the best and quickest route is to call their state arts agency and talk about it. They'll all know about it. Or feel free to call us at the National Endowment for the Arts or email us, and we can connect you directly to every state arts agency and who to talk with.
And many of those opportunities that you spoke of are in fact created by the NEA through its grants, yes?
Indeed. The National Endowment for the Arts every year gives 40% of its grant-making budget to the states. So it makes us a very strong partnership together, and that is how it's connected to the National Endowment for the Arts.
And what would you like to convey to today's college students who are considering careers in the arts and perhaps more broadly in the nonprofit sector?
When I look back at the way leadership has been defined over the years, it does look like it's changing. It used to be that people would regard a leader as somebody who was really an expert in a specific subject matter, really knew the depth of a subject and could attack that specific subject from all kinds of different angles, and that leader could tell you about it and be very informative. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's very heartening to have that knowledge. But today's leader, they're going to be the people who can synthesize disparate pieces and stand in the middle of ambiguity without shrinking back. They're going to be the ones who can take pieces that don't seem initially to be aligned, but they know how to synthesize and bring those informations together so that they can assemble it and find the best way to navigate through something. Well, to be able to have that skill is one that is at the heart of creativity and what the arts do every single day. So for those students who are wanting to be connected in the arts, you're already a leader because of the training and the mindset that you have. There's never been a better time, so go for it.
And they do often have to stand, as you say, in the middle of ambiguity, and they shouldn't be afraid of that. And I think more colleges, universities are preparing courses and preparing students to be able to, in fact, address that head on without avoiding it.
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, in the artists that we see and the arts leaders, I laugh because sometimes people do say things like, you know, I am afraid of being in the middle of ambiguity. I wish I knew what the next step was to take. But not in the arts world. When you hand an artist a blank canvas, they start drooling. The world is at their fingertips because they get to create whatever they want. And that kind of mindset is what we're looking for in terms of the ability to synthesize different disparate pieces to really arrive at solving problems in new ways and finding ways to be effective and relevant and meaningful. There are people in the world who say, I don't know what's going to happen next, and that is fearful. But in the arts world, it's an opportunity, and that's why it's such a good time to be a leader in the arts.
Indeed. And beyond budgetary issues, what do you feel is the single largest challenge to the arts today?
Well, I would say that we have an even greater opportunity to combat that old perception that the arts are off by themselves or they belong to some people and they don't belong to others when we see so many entryways for people to participate in the arts. Not everybody has to be participating in the same arts, but if we ever had an opportunity for kids to all adopt an art form because that was an expected form of expression and an opportunity for them to have at their ready beyond just the use of linear everyday words, that would be what real success is. So the challenge is, let's get out of that old perception that the arts are exclusive or that they're in a category only to be used when they want to be entertained, and let's really see the transformational power of the arts.
And it's great to recognize that that's in fact an old perception that continues to positively change. Well, on that crucial note, as we actively and collectively work to support the arts, support art education, we wish you, Chairman Chu, and the NEA every success with your vital programs and their impact through grants, through public awareness, and through innovation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Aspire and Innovate are produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press for PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.